We're back with Ed Dowd, who's a former BlackRock portfolio manager and now a principal at Finance Technologies. Ed, thank you for taking some of your busy time. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no worries. Thanks for having me on again, Todd.
So we were just talking beforehand. Give me your view of the world. Where are we? Snapshot of what's happening, please.
Yeah, we've been calling since January 9th when we put out a report, Dangers of a Deep Worldwide Economic Recession, driven by real estate and illegal immigration going the other way in the U.S. And we're seeing, you know, if you had asked me then what my confidence level was, it was pretty high. Mm-hmm. Roll forward 6 months, we have more data. We put out some follow-up reports on the real estate market, and we're even more convicted now. We think it's going to become apparent to most that there's a housing crisis being driven by multifamily. That'll start to become apparent in the next several months. But, you know, you throw on top of this the Iran-Israel situation with the potential closing of the Straits of Hormuz, you get an oil shock. That's an epic disaster. You know, oil shocks are short-term inflationary, medium-term deflationary. They crush consumer demand. And mm-hmm. people got to understand it's the delta, not the absolute level of the oil price.
Right.
A shock like that is cost push inflation. It immediately crushes consumer demand. The consumer is already, the middle class consumer is already strapped. They can't afford to buy homes. They're using credit cards to live. So this would only hasten a recession. And then unfortunately, Trump's going to be labeled if this doesn't get solved or rectified, and we do get an oil shock. This will be Trump's recession, lock, stock, barrel.
Well, it's going to be his war too, in my opinion.
He could have blamed the coming recession on the Biden administration, although he hasn't done a good job of explaining that. He seems to be very bullish on his own policies so far, which really have the tax cuts aren't here. The investments that are supposedly going to come from all these tariff negotiations aren't here yet. There's been announcements, but there's no ground broken. So he's going to own this recession if we do go to war with Iran. It'll be a disaster, absolute disaster.
I don't disagree with that at all. In fact, we've been pretty vocal. I mean, if you've got the Iranian regime on its back legs, why would you even want to enter this war at this point? I mean, there's no upside for us, in my opinion. You talked about housing. There's an issue, like in Connecticut, they just passed a law that essentially local communities have no zoning rights anymore. The state is going to push all this high density housing into these communities and destroy them. Essentially, it's happening in multiple other states. You mentioned it's going to start with multifamily. How does that impact that agenda of taking over zoning, building large amounts of housing, and bringing in voters, essentially?
You know, I haven't looked at that law yet, but the bottom line is this. We had, in 2008, single-family homes drove that crisis. Mm-hmm. We have a single-family home problem right now. New home inventory is back to 2008 levels. Mortgages are unaffordable. You wrap in the insurance costs, the carrying costs of a house. There's more sellers than buyers now. What was holding up the market and the economy was the illegal immigration. We brought in about 20 million people. There was a multi-housing family boom. The construction levels in that space exceeded the 70s housing boom. So we went past that peak. A multifamily housing boom, and that's all rolling over. All of our stats, new permits rolled in 22. What's floated the economy a little longer than maybe a single-family home construction boom is it takes about 6 months from new permit issue to completion of the property before they can sell. It's a 6 month construction period. Multifamily projects of five or more units, which is the bulk of where this building has occurred, takes over a year. So all the completions are coming to an end. We're going to see construction layoffs, there's supply hitting the market, and you have illegal immigrants leaving, self-deporting, and all you need is to stop the flow at the border, which we've done, and it's ripe for more supply, less demand, and price corrections, which will eventually work its way into the collateral of the banks and the private credit funds that are up to their eyeballs in this stuff. So before the oil shock issue, we were calling for a deep recession. We weren't calling for it to go systemic. If you throw in an oil shock, it could go systemic. The odds of a systemic banking crisis have increased with this nonsense on Israel and Iran.
So we're talking about an oil shock, the war shock. How do we solve, if we don't get that, is there a way out of the recession, the soft landing, to use a cliche?
Recessions are hard to predict. I mean, we do think there's going to be one. We think there'll be a correction in the stock market. And our call's been and continues to be, you want to be in risk-free assets. If you have no risk tolerance, buy three-month T-bills. If you have more risk tolerance, you can play the yield curve and buy the 10 and 30-year. That's more for professionals. We think one of the best asymmetric trades right now is everybody's underweight bonds and overweight equities, because we've had a bond bear market like we had. You're a bond guy. We haven't seen a bond bear market like this in 40 years.
Yeah, since
it's a disaster. 94,
I think. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a disaster for bondholders, and the sentiment on bonds is so negative. I think it's one of the best asymmetric trades out there because people aren't seeing the real estate issue, because a lot of people don't realize it was driven by illegal immigration. And we were calling for a recession at the end of 23-24, as were a bunch of other economists. That never materialized, but we didn't at the time realize that there was a $1.5 to $2 trillion government deficit spending to bring in 20 million illegals.
So which markets, there's a lot of really strong markets, Miami Beach, LA, are those going to be impacted also, do you think, housing wise?
The Northeast has been holding up better than the South. The South is already rolling over. It'll eventually hit the Northeast. So this will become, a nationwide issue. Some, real estate's generally speaking local, so there'll be pockets of strength. But all in all, once it infects the banking system, credit will tighten and no one will be able to get approved, and prices will collapse.
So you're talking about a risk-free trade, which is, treasuries historically. Is it still a risk-free asset?
Yeah, look, the other thing is everybody, the end of the dollar dominance and the end of the U.S. Empire is a little, I think it's a slow decline. I think there'll be a rush to safety, and there's not, you can buy gold, but there's not enough gold to meet all the asset demand out there. So there'll be a knee-jerk reaction into treasuries. And once the bond market sniffs a recession coming and inflation coming down, there'll be a stampede out of equities into bonds is our suspicion.
And what do you think? The Fed kept rates steady today. What say you about that?
Yeah, look, the Fed seems to think tariffs are inflationary. We've looked at historically at tariffs, and we put out a report about a week and a half after Trump announced them. They're longer term, they're deflationary. They destroy demand. It's going to cause a margin squeeze on corporate profits because they're going to raise prices, but it's going to destroy demand on the other side, especially if your product is elastic and you're going to have issues. There's going to be substitutions. So net, if you look at the overall revenue, corporate revenue is going to decline. It's going to be a margin squeeze.
So what about manufacturing? I've seen a lot of news, but is it happening, as they say?
It's hard to say, but we looked at inflation. Let's take the oil shock out of the equation. Inflation is coming down. If there wasn't an oil shock, we would be expecting inflation to print a sub CPI number, sub 2% number in the next 6 months. Housing is, and shelter is 36% of CPI. When you throw in all the ancillary services around housing, it's 45% of CPI. And that's sticky and slow, and it's rolling over, and inflation is gonna go lower. And the Fed is looking at all the wrong things. The Fed is too tight. Real interest rates, we think, are about 2%. And how do you solve a high real interest rate? Well, high real interest rates solve themselves. They slow economic growth, and we think the Fed's eventually going to be cutting quite a bit.
Is Powell acting politically? I know what Trump thinks. What do you think?
Well, I saw I can't get inside his mind. But, you know, the longer we keep our yields here, and I don't know, people maybe haven't noticed, but the rest of the world is easing and lowering interest rates. That we are the world interest rate, so we're about to see, and this is going to be very interesting. We're about to see the dollar bottom. It's I have my friend Tim Wood does a lot of great work on cycles for the dollar.
Your government doesn't care about you. That's why you need a medical emergency kit. It contains life-saving medications like ivermectin, Z-Pak, and antibiotics. Stock them before they block them.
I'm David Cross, and you may know me from my election integrity work, but I also own U.S. Asset Management, a family-owned and operated investment advisory practice. I'm a certified portfolio manager, and my job is to help you make better decisions with your money. One of the things we try to avoid is investing in companies that push the woke agenda. If you're invested with one of the big firms out there, there's a pretty good chance that you're feeding the beast that hates your values. Our company is 100% conservative, and we'd love to have an opportunity to work with you. Check us out at us-am.com and look for our big, proud American Eagle logo.
It's a four-year cycle. The timing band for the four-year cycle low is now. And he was saying in the summer of last year, he's expecting a four-year cycle low in the first or second quarter of 2025. And I think we're about to see the dollar rip once we put in a monthly swing low. As we roll through the next 6 to 12 months, we're going to see a dollar liquidity shortage problem, and the dollar is going to just take off.
Is there anywhere else, any other, you know, reserve assets right now besides gold? I mean, I know the Chinese, the Russians, they're all buying as much gold as they can get their hands on. But is anyone trusting the euro or the yuan, or is there anything else?
No. Once the new trend reversal begins, and it will, and the dollar starts going back up, and it becomes apparent to the world that we're going into a global recession, we're going to see a nice bid to the dollar. We're going to see a nice bid to U.S. Treasuries, and yields are going lower in the U.S. eventually. But we're the lone holdout. We're keeping rates high, and you know, if you wanted to put on your conspiracy theory hat, this is geopolitical because you're choking off. You can use the interest rates and the dollar as a weapon. And our interest rates are excessively high compared to the rest of the world. And because of the reliance on the dollar system, we're choking off liquidity to the world. And you could say it's going to, we're going to be the cleanest shirt in a dirty laundry basket. And that's what's going to happen.
So, what do you think of Bessent's talk of, some treasury buybacks at discounts and to reduce the debt that way and refinance from there? Have you looked at that?
I haven't looked at that. What I don't like is they seem to have changed their tune. You know, when the administration first began, there was talk of Doge cuts. Looks like we're not getting those. Mm-hmm. There was talk of reducing the deficit to 3% of GDP by the end of Trump's term. Now they've thrown that plan out the window, and now they're talking about growing our way out of the deficit. And I don't see how we're going to be able to grow our way out of the deficit, given what the Biden administration did for the prior 2 years to Trump, 23 and 24. The whole economy was illegal immigration and NGO spending and nonsense.
So what does the future look like I know you're looking for a possible oil shock, which would really put us in a recession and hurt, you know, the consumer, retail guys. What do you see happening longer term?
Well, you know, we weren't even looking for an oil shock. We're going to get a recession regardless. An oil shock would only hasten our thesis. Okay. We're going to get a recession regardless. And, you know, there's going to be a risk off trade. Is it going to be as bad as 2008? We don't know. But if you throw in an oil shock, it'll be as bad as 2008. Wow. You know, no holds barred there. That's an easy call.
And can the Fed do what it did in 2008, or does it?
No, they can do whatever they want. But by the time they react, you know, Fed monetary policy takes, 12 to 18 months to work its way into the economy. So there'll be some rallies in risk assets as they start to act. But we won't bottom out until sometime 6 months after the Fed begins to act.
Well, let's talk one of your other areas of expertise, all-cause mortality or excess mortality. What are you seeing there? I know you've been early on this. Is the trend continuing?
Yeah. Well, no, we discontinued our work there because we were doing it for free. But I can tell you, you know, look, the U.S. disabilities, which comes directly from the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, hit a new all-time high last month.
Mm-hmm.
We got about 5.5 million disabled people. It's a monthly survey. It's a lot of people think it's tied to claims and that it's fraud. It's not. It's a monthly survey. It's statistically imputed. And they ask 6 or 7 questions, and if you answer yes to one of them, you're labeled disabled in the survey. And that number has been taken off since February of 2021 at a slope of growth that just, you know, statistically was a 3 to 4 standard deviation trend change, and it's been nonstop since 21. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we believe it's the COVID vaccine, and this trend continues, and it's not changing. So that. And, you know, one thing I can say is morbidity leads mortality. So every time we get an uptick in this number, you can expect excess mortality to follow. The last time we checked, excess mortality was running between 5% and 10%. And, you know, Swiss Re, a reinsurer, said the same thing. They did a study that they changed their models and think that U.S. Excess mortality is going to be persistent between 3% and 10%. So, you know, we got their numbers, we got our numbers. It's kind of a slow death roll and a slow disability and injury roll. And, you know, I'm watching the current administration trying to scratch in my head why we don't seem to talk about this. We talk about everything else, but
yeah.
So that seems to me to be a big problem. If they have a plan, that's great. The clock started on their watch January 20th, so they own all the deaths and disabilities that occur from that date forward. So if they got a plan, I'd like to see it, you know, executed soon. If they don't, and there's political reasons because Trump, you know, Trump is ultimately the boss. And if he is refusing to look at this, then, you know, that's probably why we still have this elephant in the room.
Yeah, and they just released more mRNA vaccines. Is that what you're talking about? You know, a plan for dealing with the vax or a plan for dealing with the disabled?
There seems to be this trust me, bro mentality in the MAHA movement that, you know, we can't, for political reasons, recall the vaccine. You know, I don't buy that.
No, I don't.
You know, we had a swine flu a vaccine that killed 25 people and they removed it. And, you know, VAERS is currently at, I think, around 20,000 for the U.S., 36,000 worldwide. And then the underreporting factor is 40 to 45. So, you know, we could easily impute that from the VAERS alone, forget our data, forget all the work we did. You can impute 600,000 to 700,000 Americans disappeared because of the vaccine. Our numbers are, you know, we estimate around 800,000, but, you know, who cares? It's way bigger than 25 people.
So I'm of the opinion that the reason they can't do this is because it's DOD pushing it for bioweapons research and it's a big clinical trial. But that's just me. I can't prove that. I mean, Bobby's talked about that. What about fertility? Do you see that impacting the economy, the demographics?
You know, we never did a study on that. And the reason we didn't start it is because fertility is different than excess all-cause mortality, which is it's stable. So the baseline was easy to compute statistical variations. Birth rates are more, they fluctuate more, they're more variable. There's a lot of confounding factors like economics. And when the economy is good, people have more babies. When it's bad, they have less. So we never did a study because it was too early. What you want to see in a study like this is persistency of lower birth rates. Then you have a signal. We could do a study, but it would take a lot of our time. And if anybody wants to fund it, we can do it. But we're not doing it for free anymore. Free time's over.
One more question, then I want to hear about what you're doing in your business. Debt service, it's spiking, obviously. How does that get resolved, or does it, or what's the future look like?
Well, that eventually becomes a problem. And, you know, I think Japan is the central bank that goes first, and we have a problem. I mean, look, the global debt crisis gets resolved ultimately in the currency markets. Mm-hmm. And we've been having we've been watching what's going on with the Bank of Japan. They have a doom loop going on. They have a choice. They can either save their economy or save the global carry trade. And so mm-hmm. At some point that gets resolved. So the U.S. is probably going to be the last to have problems, but you know the problems have already begun, and I don't know how that manifests. But you know, mm-hmm. in the near term, I'm still bullish U.S. bonds into this next downturn.
Great. What do you guys focused on at Finance Technologies?
Yeah, we're focused on these economic reports. We're selling them. Our big report came out in January. We've had a bunch of follow-up reports that are much cheaper. We're getting good feedback. You know, when we first put out the big economic report in January, 80% of the people who purchased that report were in the real estate market, which was quite interesting. So people in the real estate market, and because there's a lot, you know, there's not a lot of mark to market and there's a lot of slow rolling issues that go on there. They're seeing it, but they don't want to talk about it.
Yeah, because it impacts their business.
Yeah.
So how do people follow, get the reports, see what you're doing, buy it, all that stuff?
FinanceTechnologies.com with a PH instead of an F. We have product pages where you can buy the big report, which is relatively expensive, or you mm-hmm. can buy the cheaper follow-up reports. But if you're if you have the money and you want to get the big picture, buy the big report and then all the follow-up reports.
Excellent. Ed, thank you very much for your time, man. I know you're busy.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
Ciao.